89.1 WEMU, and welcome to this week's edition of Issues of the Environment. David Fair with you, and of course, Issues of the Environment is a regular Wednesday feature during Morning Edition. It would appear that spring has finally arrived. Now, I'm starting to see some blooms on our trees. We haven't had snow in over a week. We might actually be beyond winter. Time to get out into the yard and the garden and start the landscaping and floral and plant designs for the season. And of course, for this program's sake, we want to explore ways to do so in an environmentally responsible and sustainable way. My guest is an expert at doing exactly that. Drew Lathan is principal owner of Creating Sustainable Landscapes, and he's personally transformed a lot he owns in Ann Arbor from a traditional yard to an oasis for wildlife, and is doing the same at a property in Novi now. Drew, good morning and welcome to WEMU.
Good morning, David.
Well, let's start here. What is the difference between, say, sustainable landscaping and non-sustainable landscaping?
So in sustainable landscaping, what you're doing is you're using plants and methods and materials that don't require resource inputs. So things like water, fertilizers, pesticides, and other chemicals. And you do that through the use of native plants that have evolved in our area. And for 10,000 years, nobody was fertilizing them and watering them, so they're sustainable alternatives for the yard.
So all of those plants and flowers that I buy at big box stores and at local nurseries, those are not the plants you're talking about?
Correct. They are not. For the most part, they are not native plants. They're from other ecosystems, whether they're in Europe or Asia or perhaps other parts of the United States. And as a result, since they did not evolve here, they usually require more resource inputs. You hear about fertilizing them and watering them and such.
And what would be the environmental advantage to avoiding those kinds of plants? Because they are beautiful, but what would be the advantage for me to look elsewhere and go native?
Well, they certainly are beautiful. So native plants can be and are just as beautiful as others, as non-native plants. And so the environmental advantages are you don't need to spend money on watering. 30% of our potable water that we spend good money on to clean, we throw on the ground east of the Mississippi River to water our lawns and water our flowers and such. You don't need chemicals because they evolved without any chemicals and resource inputs. And the third advantage is that they are much better hosts for wildlife in terms of our pollinators, butterflies, and other insects and wildlife that 96% of our bird species rely on for food in the spring.
And of course, that will support and extrapolate out in terms of its environmental benefit all the way into what we eat.
Correct. So when we are planting native plants, we're supporting a much wider range of pollinators. Native bees, for example, are four times more likely to take nectar from native flowers than non-native flowers. And bees are a critically important pollinator of our crops, and we all need to eat.
89.1 WEMU, I'm David Fair, and this is Issues of the Environment. We're talking sustainable landscaping today with the owner of Creating Sustainable Landscapes. That is Drew Lathan. And Drew, now I mentioned at the outset that you, at a former property in Ann Arbor, went entirely native on that property. Now, can you paint us kind of a word picture of what that may have looked like?
Sure. In the front, it looked like a traditional kind of landscape that you'd drive by or walk by in suburbia. It had lawn, but it had a buffalo grass lawn instead of our typical fescue lawns. And buffalo grass is native to the High Plains, to about as far east as Chicago. It only grows 5 inches tall, so it doesn't ever need to be mowed, and it has 8-foot deep roots, so it never needs to be watered or fertilized. Up against the house were native perennial beds, so had things like rattlesnake master in and echinacea and wild bergamot and wild geranium, and so these look like the typical kinds of beds that you would have.
And it looked well manicured?
It certainly did look well manicured. People would walk by and go, oh, gee, that looks beautiful. I did have a couple rain gardens in the front, which looked like perennial beds. They're just depressed perennial beds rather than raised perennial beds, into which stormwater off the roof was put so that it can infiltrate into the ground rather than go into the storm sewer.
I think sometimes a misperception when people talk about going entirely native and doing this, that they're just going to let it run rampant through the entire lawn, and it's going to look unkempt, and it's going to look out of place within a suburban setting. And you're saying that doesn't have to be the case at all.
It certainly doesn't have to be in the case, that case. You can have it look as manicured, and I can show you a picture of it. And, of course, the listeners can't see a picture of it. But I can show you a picture of it, and it looks like a typical suburban yard with lawn and bushes in the front and flower beds in the front.
I think for some people who might be concerned about their homeowners association raising a stink, you ran into none of that, and your neighbors had no issue with what you were doing.
My neighbors thought it was pretty cool, just all the butterflies and other kinds of pollinators and the birds that showed up.
You sold that property, and the people that bought the house decided to keep all of that.
Yes, they did, and they decided to keep doing the maintenance activity that I used on that yard, which was prescribed burning. So rather than spending 2 or 3 days cutting everything down in the spring, I spent about 45 minutes and burned it down.
We need to talk about that. This is Issues of the Environment on 89.1 WEMU. I'm David Fair, and we're talking today with Drew Lathan about interesting ways to landscape your yards in environmentally friendly ways. Drew is the principal owner of Creating Sustainable Landscapes, a prescribed burn in a neighborhood setting. That seems to be contrary to what we've been taught about safety.
Sure. And so it certainly carries some more risk than cutting down plants, but well managed. With some expertise, you can do that very safely. So, for instance, back burns, burning into the wind. The last time I burned, it was 38 degrees. The humidity was 25%. We had a north wind at 8. Smoke went straight up on 1/14 of an acre. Never put any smoke onto anybody else's yard.
So it was non-intrusive for the area.
It was non-intrusive. Some municipalities won't let you do that.
Ann Arbor does, though.
Ann Arbor does, and more municipalities across southeast Michigan are starting to adopt the process of prescribed burning. But if you feel uncomfortable or not allowed to do that, then you can always just cut it down.
Now, the folks in Ann Arbor are very aware that there are prescribed burns that take place in our municipal parks and in our municipal forests, but I don't think we've thought much about it happening in a suburban or residential setting. This is the natural way of dealing with our ecosystem, isn't it?
Certainly. Most of Michigan burned every 5 to 10 years in pre-settlement times, either through lightning strikes or through the Native Americans setting fire for a variety of reasons. And so native plants have evolved to not only tolerate but actually prefer being burned during the spring. It puts the nutrients back into the soil. It warms the soil, allows for earlier emergence of the plants, and they're typically unfazed by it.
If we were to have a new residential development decide from the outset that we're going to go entirely native species and create this wildlife oasis for which you've described, how big a benefit would that be to the environment as opposed to having a property here and a property there?
Well, certainly most of our habitats and natural areas have become highly fragmented. And so we've all seen the turtle squished on the road. Mm. And begs the question, why'd the turtle cross the road? And so the turtle crossed the road because its habitat was not large enough. So the larger in a new subdivision that you can make these native habitats, the larger the habitat that animals will have and create corridors. So if you have a new subdivision between, say, two woodlots, you've now effectively connected those two woodlots and provided corridors for beneficial wildlife to move back and forth between.
Now, your company is Creating Sustainable Landscapes. Is it an educational resource as well as a commercial endeavor?
Sure. I do a lot of teaching and community education programs across southeast Michigan. My website has a resources page where people can go find books and articles and things that they can then link
to. I could get started by looking at your website.
Certainly.
Certainly. And then if I wanted it done professionally, you're there to help me out.
Yes. And I'll help people in whatever way they want. If they want to do the work and just need some consultation, I'll consult with them, or I'll design, or I'll install and maintenance anywhere along that spectrum.
And it's creatingsustainablelandscapes.com, correct?
Correct.
Drew Lathan, thank you so much for your time and your expertise. Appreciate it.
Thank you, David.
That is Drew Lathan. He is principal owner of Creating Sustainable Landscapes. Again, you can find more information at creatingsustainablelandscapes.com. I'm David Fair, and this is Issues of the Environment, a regular Wednesday feature produced in partnership with the Washtenaw County Environmental Health Division. It's heard only on 89.1 WEMU.